dreams. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. I share these words from Langston Hughes, an African-American poet born in Lawrence, Kansas, who is part of the Harlem Renaissance. So we connect ourselves across time and space this morning. As we welcome and greet each other, let us remember we come from many places and many different experiences. So today is about looking at those connections of community. Take a moment to greet your neighbor and say hello. We welcome everyone here to enter as you are, whether you come with weary spirit seeking rest or come with a joyful heart eager to share. This is a house of connection where we welcome old and new friends to seek meaning freely, respecting the dignity and worth of every person. Compelled to build a community on the foundation of love. This community encourages truth-seeking, where scientists and mystics abide in a community of searchers and builders of social justice. This is a home of prophecy, outrunning times past and present in visions of growth and progress. This fellowship cradles our dreams. It is a workshop of our common endeavor. May we know the joy of playing and working together, the joy of the wholeness it offers. This morning we light this chalice. It's a symbol of the warmth of our community, the brightness that love brings to the world, illuminating our search for justice and peace. Light, light, the power of nature that nurtures all living things here in our midst in this flame, so tiny and so significant. May we be inspired to expand and extend our warmth and compassion as individuals and as a community. Let us stand and sing as you're able. Hymn number 140, Hail the Glorious Golden City.
Borders, justice reigns to
I draw your attention to the announcements in our order of service, which give structure and momentum to our community life.
The translation from Swahili is in the order of service, but you don't really need that. Just remember that it is being sung by orphans, young orphans in Tanzania, orphaned by an unending civil war. They are talking about they want us to sing, but they want us to remember and keep remembrance in their hearts.
Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection. a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like, please share a brief personal expression of a special joy or sorrow.
I have a joy that my grandma and grandpa came, and also I made a really big tower. I basically used all the blocks in the nursery.
Other joys. Who else has built a tower this morning? Yes, William.
I built a tower out of Legos.
Yeah? Good. All right.
I'm Michaela Severs. My tower is that I was accepted into the K-State early admissions program for vet school. And my concern is that I was gone this week when my dad had his joy, right, of becoming a year older. I won't tell you what.
Michael said they welcomed even old people. 6-0. And one of my joys is my older daughter, the shorter one, is now, well, will be shortly gainfully employed at Mercy as a nurse.
Wonderful.
Enel Forrester, of course. As you all know, government workers are back at work, so both my son and daughter-in-law are back working, which is a great joy.
Yes.
And we wish everyone good luck with this lunacy that's been going around. It looks like it may happen again, but let's hope not.
Ken Embers, I have the opportunity and good fortune to be able to go back to Vietnam starting tomorrow for 6 weeks. I'll be teaching English as a second language at the Vabis Hong Lam Vocational College. It's an Australian vocational college. And I'll teach there for 5 weeks. Then I'll go up to the Bong Song Lucky Stars Library Learning Center that we built in Bong Song, Vietnam, and spend a week teaching there and visiting the Phu Hoa Orphanage, where we support a couple young girls there. So take care of Pat while I'm gone.
Molly McGoy, I have a concern that evidently when school's out for 2 days, that a lot of families get used to being off and don't come to fellowship. So it looks like the long weekend has caused possibly a drop in attendance. But anyway, it's been fun, and we're all gearing up for parent-teacher conferences in the Manhattan School District. So hopefully we'll have some joys about Nick that we'll find out this next week.
Yesterday afternoon in Wichita at Watermark Books, we celebrated and grieved the passing of Tom Page, who died on August 4th. He was a member of this fellowship, though not a very active member, because when he joined, it was the end of his walking time. And from there, he moved into a wheelchair, and then his last days, of course, he could not hardly move at all. So it was a wondrous, wondrous occasion, and it was a great joy and privilege, and of course a certain amount of sadness that goes along with that journey. But there we are in Wichita as well as Manhattan. May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts.
What is the big pot for? We're going to do a little thing. My big pot is pretty cool, actually. Isn't that big pot pretty cool? Anybody else have a pot that big at their house? Oh, a few. Is this on? Does it matter? So today I read the program, and it said that the adults were going to talk about building community. And I wasn't really sure what that meant. So I thought I'd ask you guys what building community meant to you. Anybody got any ideas at all? Is that better?
By trying to put another community together.
All right. Anybody else? What makes Manhattan and the community of all of these people really good? What makes it a good?
Okay. Working together.
Working together. So this we'll call community, and we're going to add working together into our pot. Okay? Working together. Anybody else want to put anything good in this pot? Leah?
By helping each other when someone else is in need.
Ooh, helping each other. Here we go. Big helping of helping each other. Okay, we got to stir it up. Mixing it up. Nick?
Well, cookies help.
Cookies? Cookies help, all right. We're going to put some cookies in. Stir those cookies up. Good. William?
Work at restaurants, they need help.
Work at restaurants need help. Oh, help is a big theme here. Okay, put some of that in. Some. Okay, Jocelyn, you got anything? Okay, Lily, you got anything? Early. She's my shill. What? Oh, okay.
Keep this Earth clean.
Ooh, we're going to keep the earth clean in this community. All right, mix that up.
Let everyone that you can to include everyone when you're playing a game and they want to play.
Oh, man, we're going to include everyone in this community.
Let people read your books.
Oh, gosh, that's great. Read books together. Read them. You read to others and others read to you.
Share.
Big helping of share in there. I think we need some more cookies, Nick. What do you think? Sugar. Okay. It's like a popcorn. You know, one of the things I think we've missed is parks, like playgrounds and green space. That's what city directors would call it. What? Brownies. All foods that are good. What about a place to live?
A house.
A house. Oh. People to comfort you. Oh, man, this is a great community. Jocelyn.
Flowers.
Okay, that's a lot of stuff. Let's eat it. Okay, how would we eat it?
Yes.
Share it.
Share it. Would we all stand around the pot? And maybe.
Oxygen.
Oxygen. What are we missing? People. People need to go into this pot. Are you, and pets? Are you guys willing to be rats? Did you really say rats? My cat killed a rat this morning.
Trees.
Trees and grass and food and sharing and sugar and tomatoes.
Dirt.
Water.
Okay, now air. We got air. Oxygen, that works. So now we're going to add the most important thing to our community. People. Okay. And I got a lot of people in my pocket. It takes a lot of people to make this, this community. Do you guys think that you might be willing to, let's think here. People like to get paid to do all that work, don't they?
Yeah.
What kind of people do you think we need to make this community thing work?
Police.
I bet they want to be paid, too. What?
Force.
Police force. Joss?
Pianos.
Pianos. Darn right. Music, joy. Oh, yeah, we're going to got good concerns. Nick?
Leaders.
Have you ever heard the phrase, too many chiefs, not enough Indians?
Chairs.
Okay, so let's see what we pull out of this big pot when we add all those wonderful things. And volunteers, of which I hope all of you, volunteers. I hope you'll all volunteer to help make this wonderful community. What are we going to pull out?
We affirm the renewal of life, rising from the earth and reaching for the sun. All living creatures will fulfill themselves. We affirm the steady growth of companionship with all of life, rising from ancient cradles and reaching for the stars. People the world over shall seek the ways of understanding. We affirm the continuing hope that out of all tragedy in our lives and in the world, we shall rise together to build a better world. In the spirit of coming together to do good works, let us sincerely share what we have to give.
Hi. When I was 22, I became the lead site coordinator for the first of two different Habitat for Humanity houses in Cincinnati. I was pretty young. I really was not qualified for this job. But the first house that I was in charge of was especially difficult and special to me because we bought a site that had a very steep hill, and it caused a lot of design problems. And so we spent about 2 years redesigning it before we could even start construction. And then the construction took about a year, which is a pretty long time. So once we started the construction, I was the person that basically coordinated everything. I made sure that the materials got there and that we had some sort of a schedule and a budget. And coordinating the volunteers was a really big part of it because most of the labor was done with volunteers. We had groups from churches and organizations and things like that, and they would fill our Saturdays with help, and they're really who built the house. It was amazing because most of the people that helped really didn't know anything about construction. They didn't know how to pound nails and hang drywall, but we would teach them, and they built a house. So because it was so involved and I was there practically every Saturday, it really took over my life. But it was welcome because I didn't know a whole lot of people in town. I was still kind of new and I didn't have a lot of friends. And so that became my community. It was really rewarding for me to watch these groups of volunteers come and with little skill, put together this house and work together. I worked for a construction company at the time, so during the week I was doing similar things, but that was a different thing altogether because that was my job, and everybody that I worked with was there for the paycheck and the benefits and all that. So it was on Saturdays, the people that were there building, they wanted to be there, and including me, I loved it. So it was, it's definitely a different thing to work together with people that, you know, you come here on Sunday with and you dress up for and you exchange polite conversation with. It's a different thing altogether to work on a job site and pound nails and get dirty and learn a new skill and, you know, sweat. And it's different. So it brought people together. I have to say that one of my favorite things about it was lunch. Because, and I'm a little embarrassed to say that, but it was really... It was part of the community building. Somebody would volunteer to bring lunch, and it was usually a big pot like what Sandy had, and it was full of some warm, yummy stew. And we would all sit down together with our dirty hands and our dusty clothes, and we would share a meal together. And that also brought us together. The other part of it that really was kind of the common thread throughout was the homeowner. She was chosen early on. And so she was the person that was waiting patiently for this to happen so she could move in. We had to work with her a lot because she had to, I don't know if the rules have changed, but at the time you had to, the homeowners had to put in $500 of sweat equity in addition to buying the house. And so she was there a lot of the Saturdays, and she couldn't do a lot as far as the labor went. But she was always there, you know, just kind of thanking us and cleaning up after us, and she was the reminder of why we were doing this. So it was definitely one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. Thank you.
Building community. As Universalists, we are called to understand that we are all in this together. As Unitarians, we are called to unite to build a better world. Community, at its best, provides a sense of belonging. You don't have to hide. I can remember growing up in a very tight-knit community in Chicago. And I remember one afternoon I came home from school and my mother was in bed screaming and sweat was just pouring out of her forehead and out of her body, and my sisters didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. My father was an hour away working, and so I ran across the lot to Mrs. Fuse, and I said, "Mom is really sick. She's really sick." So she ran over, and she provided the cold cloth, and it was a gallbladder attack, and but we knew where to go. There were doors that we could knock on, and people would open those doors and come running out to help. So I grew up with that sense of neighborhood. And in this neighborhood, there were every single kind, not every, that's not true, but many, many first-generation, second-generation Americans from Poland, from Italy, from Sicily, which is part of Italy, but anyway, and then the Swedes that were second generations and Germans, and so it was just a wonderful, just pulsing with all kinds of tones and the way people spoke and the food that they shared and that the way they celebrated their holidays. And there was a corner store that you could just go, "I don't have any money," and, you know, you could get something and your mother would have to pay for it. There was the milkman and there was the knife sharpener who would come by and sharpen your knives. So there was this sense that everything was there and it would come to you, and that you didn't have to go very far to do anything. You didn't have to drive. You could walk. You could ride your bike. And it was just a beautiful experience growing up. But of course, now when I look back, I realize there was no There were no African Americans. There were no gay people living there that I knew of. I'm sure there were some. Mothers seldom worked, and they only worked if the husband was dead. Mostly, my mother worked at home for my father, or with my father. So, obviously, it wasn't a utopian world, but it was a really lot of good parts to it. It nourished, it generated, and promoted a kind of living together that said, when you're down, we'll come and help. And it was really a good crucible for learning compassion. John Gardner writes that the breakdown of communities has had a serious disintegrating effect on the behavior of individuals. Personal and social breakdown. The casualties cram juvenile courts, psychiatrist offices, and drug abuse clinics. Children need structure that supports them. In an earlier era, if I were to do something wrong, my mother would get a phone call because all the neighbors were watching out. They knew what the kids were doing, and they were all in this together to make sure that their children were safe. But today, so many children have no one looking after them. It's only when they cause a big problem do they get attention. There's a troubling number of very successful, highly rewarded individuals in business and government who engage in behavior that brings things crashing down. Does that sound familiar? There are businesses and government. You can say that they betrayed their values for some gratification. They couldn't resist money, power, sensual pleasure. Perhaps they had no values to betray. That's a disturbing thought. But more and more, it seems like that there are segments of our culture where those values of sharing and putting everything in the pot and stirring it together seem to be not something everyone agrees to. Reflect on the number of individuals in this transient, pluralistic society who have no allegiance to any group. Think of the elderly who are stuck at home. There are so many people in rural Kansas who are unable to leave their house, and they see someone once a week who comes to provide nursing care or some kind of social service, but otherwise they're secluded. This is pretty rampant across the state. Not to mention people living in the midst of thousands and thousands of people are also often very lonely. They're not connected. So much of our culture seems to want to erode a sense of community because we know that we live in this great time of moving here, moving there, and you have all this technology to reach out all the time and to express yourself. And it's just exploding in this information era. But what happens to the one-on-one direct connections? You see people often in restaurants, couples, families, and everyone's checking out their Facebook page, they're tweeting, they're hashtagging, they're doing something that says, I'm not really here. I'm not really here. So one of the values that I lift up that is so important to community is that you claim your space. I am here. And you connect. You connect. You know what's going on in their lives because you've spoken to them or you've heard from a friend. Our call as Unitarian Universalists is to create communities that not only survive change, which we're in an exploding time of change, that you can adapt when necessary, but you also seek change. So instead of fighting change, you actually welcome it into your life. You don't say that Twitter is going to go away, because it's not going to go away. There's going to be more and more kinds of different ways for people to communicate that will be just overwhelming, especially if we kind of back off from it, saying, no, I don't want any of that. And that's your right. But really, if you don't invite some of that new technology, that new way of interrelating, then you are losing out on the great pulse of energy, of change and evolution. So where's the balance? That's one of the things a progressive spiritual community asks you to find for yourselves and in your relationships with others. The traditional community was often unwelcoming to strangers, insular, and reduced communications with people who were different. You know, there was that thing of growing up, don't talk to that man in the car. Don't take candy from that man in the car. Don't go into any place where you do not know you are safe. So it wasn't like everything was safe when we were growing up, but relatively it was pretty safe. So the traditional community boasts generations of history and continuity, but families no longer seem to have a place they call the homestead where you go back. The last place from my childhood is being sold as we speak. Violet fell down and broke her hip and now is living in assisted living. That's the last place from my childhood where we would spend Christmases and Thanksgivings and we'd go for ice skating parties. So how many of you have a place in your life that you can go back to and said, this is where my grandparents ate and slept? Or my great-grandparents ate and slept. All that is kind of broken apart in this culture. So how do we replace it? How do we build that into our lives? Because it's really important that we have some sense of connection to what's deep and real and makes us feel at home. One of the ways, as Kim mentioned, is through the wonderful program Habitat for Humanity. And this morning, we're very lucky to have Roxanne James, who is the executive director for Habitat for Humanity in this region. And she would like to share a bit of what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Good morning. I'm kind of bad at standing behind a podium because I move around a lot, so I'm going to try to stay still. It's been great to see many familiar faces this morning, in addition to some new faces. Again, my name is Roxanne James. I am the newly appointed executive director for the Manhattan Area Habitat. New is in 4 months new. Kim, I can probably relate to you, relate a lot to what you shared. Where is she now?
She's teaching.
She's teaching. Okay, she's gone. So,
Transit.
Yes, there we go. And I'm going to digress just a little bit. Walking in through, I'm a local Manhattanite. I left when I was young, and now I'm back in town, and I do have a homestead, that family home that's been there for many, many years. But anyways, walking through your front doors, the picture of Richard Pitts is on front and center, and so I couldn't miss that, and Richard Pitts is my father. I come from a very odd and big and fun family, so yes, he's my dad, stepdad, but I call him my father. So that was a warm welcome for me this morning. But anyways, back to Habitat. Many of you know Habitat. We build and repair homes. That's what we do, and we have built 23 homes. For the most part, we have focused our energies on new construction, and part of my goal and passion in building community is fellowshipping and partnering and collaborating and connecting with fellowships like yourself and other organizations to expand that to weatherization projects and home improvement, because as we all know, there's a big need in our community. People need new roofs. They need wheelchair-accessible decks and entryways. So I hope to expand from the new house construction. As Kim was sharing, we've had a similar experience on a very bad lot in Ogden, actually, but we're going to have Nikki Crabtree and her two children in there before Christmas. And we're really thankful for that opportunity. She comes out every Saturday, as well as myself. You guys talk a lot about food around here, and I'm getting hungry myself. But lunchtime is a great time for fellowship. Nikki will come in with her kids, and they'll hand out thank you cards for the volunteers that have showed up and hammered those nails in and continue to see the progress in her home, because it's going to transform her life. It'll transform the life of her children as well. It's one of the things that's actually keeping her. She has a job. Habitat homeowners do incorporate, or they have a mortgage at the end in addition to their sweat equity. So they have to pay. It's not a free house. But this house will enable her to stay off of government assistance. So it will change her life in many ways. One of the very first visitors I had that came through the Habitat door when I came in was a gentleman, a student actually, that grew up in a Habitat house, and how he shared his story, how a Habitat house had changed his life and the lives of his brothers and sisters. His brother is now fully employed and was able to purchase a house of his own, and now he's a student and hopes to do the same. So that's just such a rewarding challenge, but a rewarding experience to be able to impact and touch the lives of so many, and that continues to happen in a rippling effect for their children and generations to come. So that's a little bit about kind of what we're doing in Manhattan. And like I said, I hope to broaden that scope from just new construction to branch out, to help more families, to create a bigger impact here in the community and partner together. I'm a pathological collaborator, so I like to get as much input and as much help from everybody, because I definitely do not have all the answers. I am a recovering attorney. I used to practice law in Nashville, Tennessee, and decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. So I took on a bigger and more rewarding challenge, because there's more to life than just me. And I like to take on projects and tasks that are bigger than myself. So here I am. Here's Manhattan. And I think that's probably about.
Do you want to mention your board?
Yes. In addition to rebuilding or building, I'm rebuilding. In addition to the board, the Habitat. Like I said, we're making a few changes. We've been here for 20 years, only done new construction, but we need are in seeking people to be volunteers, both on our job site, but two in our committee building. I'm all about teamwork and building a solid team that shares the same vision and passion. There are still 1.6 billion people that live in poverty housing, so if that's something that interests you and you want to get a little more involved, more hands-on, I would love to have you on one of our committees as we continue to build up the organization and help as many people in the Manhattan area that we can. And that goes for committees and our board. One of our biggest fundraisers as well is happening in April, and they're just now getting started. So that's chocolate and tea, so feel free to participate that. My door is always open. My telephone is almost always on me, except for this morning, because I'm all yours. But please contact me if you have any further questions. I kind of get off on tangents and standing behind a podium. Just I'm not used to that, because I'm used to moving around. So I apologize for that. But thank you again for having me, inviting me to share this morning, and being able to participate in your fellowship. It's been a very pleasant experience, and I've enjoyed it immensely. Thank you.
So one of the themes of building community is wholeness incorporating diversity. And, you know, that sounds beautiful, and it's something that I think we would all ascribe to as a good value to have. But when you look at how you practice that, it's interesting to see where one walks away from that value. And I had a perfect experience on Friday. I got my hair cut. And I go to a beautician's, and most of the it just smells like all this gel and hairspray and whatever they're using. It's just like, oh my God, I'm back in childhood with my mother. Anyway, and these women are just working away, and Friday is the day that everyone works, and they're just gabbing and hooting and hollering and having the best time. And I'm thinking, I just want my hair cut. I don't want to answer 15 questions about what's going on in my life. And I don't want to get into this. And then I thought, oh, I'm doing this service on community. And one of the goals is to be a world citizen and to be at home wherever you are at. So I took a few deep breaths and just started to listen more carefully, and she talked about her daughter. And then I noticed a woman about 45 wheel a boy who must have been about 10, who is pretty much folded in half and covered with some protective material because it was snowing and raining and all that stuff. And she opened the van door, and I just was so mesmerized by this fluid process. And she did everything with great care, but with great certainty. She obviously has done this many times. And she just rolls her son, I'm assuming it's her son, right into the van and closes the door. And then she gets in and looks back and makes sure he's all right. And I say to Lori, the person who's cutting my hair, I said, "Did you see that?" She goes, "Yeah, he's here every week. We watch him. He's going to the chiropractor's a couple doors down." I said, "Really?" Yeah. She goes, "Yeah, he started coming. And all of us here think it's because there was another boy who started coming about a year and a half ago, and he was in a wheelchair, and every week we would watch his mother drive him up, get him out of the thing, wheel him in, and then one day he was walking. He was walking with the help of others, and I said, 'Oh my God, look,' and everyone just rose up from their stations and looked out and saw that boy walking with the help of his mother, and they were just saying, 'Oh, can you believe it? This is an amazing thing.' So now I'm brought into a life of another kid that I've never seen, and I'm so connected. And we talk about how powerful it is to see love in action and how this impacts all these women so positively, and it draws their focus in a way that is my focus. It's a shared focus. Because to see that boy folded in half, to imagine maybe with the help of physical therapy he might unfold, was an amazing moment of community. And a silence fell between us that was so rich. And I did not feel disconnected. I did not feel alone. I did not feel like I wanted to flee that place and just get the haircut over with. I was there. So, how many places in your life do you find yourself rushing, wishing just to get through it, and miss the opportunities to connect with people who you don't assume share your values, but when you get it to the heart of caring, they often do. And it's an empowering moment to feel that get lifted up so that you are no different, no better, no worse. And you're there with those families bringing these children to get better. Isn't that why we're here? To help each other unfold, to open up, to be brave and to be strong in who we are and what we believe, balancing the great call of individualism with community, so that we can go out and help build houses, so that we can go feed people breakfast on Friday mornings, so that we can help organizations fund them through our helping hands, all the kinds of things you do as individuals in the community. But that's why we're here, in part, so that we can do this and be held up by the increasing strength of working together. And yesterday at the memorial service for Tom Page, I was reminded of his 75th birthday party at Homestead. Katie Kingery Page had arranged a number of people to read some of his poems. He had 10 books of poetry published. He was a political scientist. He spoke Portuguese and Spanish and was involved with all kinds of efforts, grassroots efforts. He knew more about progressive populist Kansas than probably anybody in the state. He was an expert on it. He was always developing new programs so people from Kansas could have a voice. He said, "You don't have to write like T.S. Eliot. Write in your own voice." So he created programs for that. Get yourself up there and do it. Don't be afraid because you're a Kansan. And so that was the energy of the 75th birthday party last year. And lo and behold, I have never been at a memorial celebration in a bookstore before. I thought, this is heaven. This is heaven. And they had a jazz trio, and they had people reading his poems, sharing their memories of all the good work he had done in Wichita to lift up the spirit, the progressive spirit, the progressive voice. And then there were tears, and there was a film. He was an incredible guitarist. I couldn't believe it. I thought, Tom? I mean, so here was a man that many of us probably don't even remember, but he was a part of this community. When he moved from Wichita, he was very isolated and lonely at Homestead, very lonely. And the first day he came here, he told Katie, we need to come back. And within three times of coming, he said, we need to become members. And you'll have to remember that, you don't have to remember because you don't know, but he had never joined a church in his entire life. And so this was the first congregation that he became a member of. And it held him up during the week. Just the small visits, just what happens here. So don't discount what we do. I know you don't, but let's lift it up. Let's praise it. Let's do a better job. Let's get out and build homes, feed the poor, have fun, share meals together. So, it's important to dissolve the we-they barriers. Very important. It's essential to building true and strong and fundamentally good community. And remember, mature members of a community are always inviting the young ones in, inviting them to take responsibility for being a member of their community, so that when they are 18 and 19, they just don't wander off and get so disconnected that they have some place to come back to. Or if they live in San Diego, they can find a Unitarian Universalist young adults group. They don't even need to go to the service, but they can connect, right? This is powerful stuff. So create networks of responsibility. Come together to think about, to talk about, and act in behalf of your community, your communities. Practice the principles of wholeness, incorporating diversity. And our seventh principle asks us to respect the interdependent web of existence. And that is a very complex and multifaceted thing. Keep yourself open to all the connections, all the things that allow you to breathe and to eat and to read, all the stuff that comes from around the world into your homes, into your bodies. Be thankful. Be grateful. Practice loving kindness. So, we have a few minutes here to share what are your experiences around building community and what works for you in regards to making those connections that build strength and the ability to love more openly.
A few of us were eating with the Holbrooks a few weeks ago at Radina's and talking about, somehow about early man. And Bryce said, when hunters and gatherers caught an antelope and cooked it, they didn't just cut off a chunk and go back to their cave. They all sat around and ate it together, and this was community.
All right. We just need to get the antelope back here, right? Thank you. Sabrina.
Well, when I was a teenager, I used to walk around the block because I wasn't allowed to go anywhere else. And I walked around the block, and there was this woman who would sit on the porch. And I'd stop and talk to her, an older woman. So I don't know if community is that, but part of it was interacting with people you run into. So, yeah.
I was in the barbershop Thursday morning, and like you, having to pay full price for a half a job, just accepting that as my fate in life. But there were two kinds of discussions going on in there, and we could all agree on this is on Points Avenue, on the challenges of finding a parking place and getting through and knowing when you can go and can't go and find a parking place. We were all of one mind on that. But when they started talking economics, I just had to say, they are so far gone, there is no hope. Maybe if I had them for a day, I might be able to make a difference, but their assumptions, their level of understanding, their belief about what was facts and what was fact and what wasn't, we had to get back to the parking and how long it was taking to get this together, and how we all, whatever our understanding of economics and political reality, how far apart we were there, we could all agree on that.
Yes.
That brought two memories to my mind. The first one was that, about one block away from where my home was, there were some older boys. I suppose some of them were in college, maybe high school, and I was, grammar school or something like that. But we would play football in the street, and that was one memory. The other memory was that the community we lived in Colorado for 53 years was very much a cooperative community with a lot of volunteering. And I was remembering not too many years ago being with a crew that was working cutting trees and cleaning out brush to make things healthier and less fire danger, that kind of thing. And sort of both of those experiences were really feeling part of a very lively community.
Mm-hmm.
I came to Manhattan as a student at K-State, and I've lived in the Wareham, and I've lived in the Hartford, and now I live in Strasser Landing. And if you know the area, you know that I've only moved a total of two blocks in the last 4 years. And what I've realized is that each place I go, I meet my neighbors, and I find out, they work within a block of me. And I meet more neighbors and more neighbors, and that's my community. That's why I want to stay in Manhattan, is because I have my downtown community. I have my friends that all live down there, and we work down there, and we see each other, and we pass, and we say hello. And that brings joy to me, knowing that I have that community.
Mm. Thank you.
Sarah Hoyt, Molly McGaughey recently organized a lunch group for Unitarians to meet. I can't remember, we're doing it monthly, is that right, Tom? And so if you work on campus, or if you just want to come to campus, I suppose you should join us too for this Thursday lunch, and we meet in the Bluemont Room in the Union, and it's been really enjoyable. And so that is a way of touching base with your community, and we've had some interesting conversations. One of them was about how we can use social media more to make connections within this group and to promote some of the events and things that we care about. And so we're going to be working on that, and I look forward to more discussions along that line. We're just in the process of getting it set up, some passwords and things. So.
Wonderful.
I
I was so encouraged to hear the children add grass and soil and things like that to the pot. And Ruth, I was so happy. She just stepped out, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to sing in a minute.
Okay. To hear her talk about the hunter-gatherers and their relationship to the antelope. And I just wanted to mention that their relationship to the antelope was a sacred one, and they were always thinking about their gratitude towards what fed them. So they really blessed that animal, welcomed it into their bodies, and tried to do it honor when they ate it, and knew that they had a... Debt isn't exactly the right word. They had a familial relationship. We all have a familial relationship with every plant, animal, object, whatever that feeds us. And when you were talking about place, it made me realize that I want to thank every morsel of ground under every building and under every parking lot, every displaced animal, microbe, lizard. Just say thank you to all of them for sharing their space with us. And may we learn to cooperate always with love.
I too have those wonderful memories of growing up in a neighborhood where you knew everybody, you knew all the kids. You'd have neighborhood hide and seek games and playing kickball out in the street in the evenings while the kids, the parents sat on the porches. And, you know, I really regret that my children didn't get the chance to do that. You know, as a single parent, you know, I wasn't at home baking cookies. I was working, trying to support them. And after school, they were in daycare and they built their own little communities there. But I think it's just such a shame that in such a fast-paced lifestyle that we have to spend most of our time just surviving instead of living. Mm. And, you know, I taught them as much as I could. And thankfully, they're building communities of their own in their own special ways. It doesn't involve, you know, front yards and, you know, throwing dirt clods at each other. But they're still, you know, they're learning by sharing themselves and their love and their talent and friendship. But I really do miss the slower pace of life. Almost every day.
Yeah, and at that time there were kids like 4 to, you know, 12, 13, 14. And then it became uncool. But now I think it's so much more compressed how kids interact with each other. When we grew up, I don't know, but I mean, when we grew up, the whole neighborhood played with each other. I didn't notice that with my niece and nephew. They played with people in their age range more. Anyway. Anybody else before we sing our closing hymn? I would invite people to talk with Roxanne afterwards, and we will be providing opportunities for the fellowship to sign up and to work on a house or weatherization projects. So look for that. We really appreciate Roxanne and the work that you're doing and that you took some time out on Sunday to share with us. So let us now stand as you are able, and let us sing the closing hymn, All Our Architects, 288.
Thank you.
let me share these closing words from the Tao. Now I think I've got myself all mixed up. I'm not a good organizer here today. Let us go out into the world and build relationships of integrity and love and authenticity. Let us do it with good spirit and good hearts.